Blog Talk Radio.
Gracious, guys, just you know, so listen, you know, that song, you know, y'all, we all know that song, right? Everybody knows that song, right? And so for me, the best thing that's ever happened to me in my life is to have one of the musicians, one of my childhood heroes, on the show with me. I had this man on the show with me last two Wednesdays ago, and so but he had so much information to bless us with, to share with us history, and so his history is so amazing, and he gets to share it with us. We are so fortunate that we have this time with him, and so I just I can't believe he's here. So what I want to do is I'm going to bring him in, and we're just going to continue off from where we were last week when he was playing with Stevie Wonder. We talked all about that and through that, and but we never even got to James Brown and the stuff he did with him. So I want to bring on our special guest today, Mr. Raymond Lee Pounds. Raymond, are you there, sir?
I am here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, man, it is. It's so wonderful. You know, it's such an honor. And, you know, I get these chills every once in a while. And you're one of those people that do that to me. And thank you so much, man, for just coming on. Otis Williams from The Temptations did the same thing to me. You're here. And it's just this feeling of, you know, just having our history here talking to us, sharing, you know, what it was like for you guys to do the music that you did that blessed so many generations. And people are still to this day in love with the music that you guys did. So when I hear that song by Sir Duke, man, I was just a kid, right, man? How was that for you to be? I mean, you kind of explained some of it last week, but if you could just, on this particular song, explain how that worked out for you going in the studio and recording this song, and did you even expect for it to be what it became?
You know, I did not. I never thought about how big it might be or anything like that. We recorded so many songs daily that I just thought, okay, one day it'll be on the radio, I guess. But when the album was finished, and when I heard that song, when I'm driving down the street, and you know how it feels to hear yourself
right
on the radio when you're driving
right
down the street and a song comes on and it's you, Wardell.
Right.
You know how that feels.
Yes,
so I was so excited. And when it went to number one, and it went to number one, and it remained number one for 15 straight weeks.
Whoa! My goodness gracious, that's ridiculous! 15 weeks, just getting to
yeah
number one is a difficult task, but staying there for 15 weeks, you talk about controlling the airwaves.
15 weeks on Billboard's Hot 100.
My. Wow. So tell us the story behind, you know, I know you told me, like, you guys were almost like, it was a family with you and Stevie and the band. You guys were like living in the studio every day, right? Every day
every
was a job.
Day.
Like
every night, because most of the time he doesn't record in the daytime. Most of the time, every evening he would come to the studio about 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock and stay all night until 4 a.m. Some days we see the sunrise. You leave the studio driving home, and the sun is coming up. But
wow,
the band rehearsed Monday through Friday from 11 in the morning until 5 o'clock. That was our job to rehearse 5 days a week. We rehearsed Stevie won the song to make sure that everything is sharp, you know, because we never knew when he was going
right,
to
right
appear somewhere. So, you know, one day about 15 minutes before 5 o'clock when we were going to go home, and he shows up. He shows up. 15 minutes before rehearsal was over, and he says, I have a new song I want to teach you a new song. And that song was Sir Duke. He, you know, the part when the swing hi-hat pattern, that was Stevie's idea. When I started to play, he stopped and said, no, play this. You know, the old, that pattern. But other than that, he let me play whatever I wanted to play. That, but he made up that part. Anyway, make a long story short, he came by our rehearsal 15 minutes before rehearsal was over, and he said, I have a new song. I want to teach it to you guys. So took about 20 minutes, 25 minutes, and we knew the song. And he said, oh, it sounds great. Let's go to the studio and record it. I said, Stevie, I'm hungry. Can we go? Can I go get some food first? He said, okay, go get something to eat and come to the studio at 7 o'clock. So, you know, it's 5:30 in the afternoon. He's already gone a half an hour over our rehearsal time. But, you know, what do? When the boss shows up and he says, I'm going to teach you something, you can't say, hey, man, my time is up. 5 o'clock, I'm out of here. No, you can't say that. If the boss shows up and he wants to stay hours, you have to stay. And so, our rehearsal hall was blocked out. So I mean, nobody else was in it every day. So we went. I went to eat at 5:30. I went, had some food, and I went to the studio, which was nearby, and and proceeded to do what you do when you record a song. First, the engineer gets a sound on the drums. He mics up the drum that you're going to use, and you get a drum sound on all the drums. Then he tells the bass player, and the engineer gets the sound on the bass, and then the engineer gets the guitar, and he gets the sound, and he gets the sound on the keyboard. After everybody's sound is established, then we begin. We say, let's play Sir Duke. We played it once. He said, okay, let's record. That's it. That was it.
Wow.
No, take two and take three and, let's do another one. No.
That was it.
We learned the song. Now turn on the red light. Let's record.
Wow.
And that's it.
What year was this?
There's
round?
One mistake. There's one mistake in there.
What's that?
I made a mistake in Sir Duke. That I never tell anybody, but I'm going to tell you now. I'm going to tell anybody who's listening. I made a mistake on Sir Duke.
What did you do?
After I played a fill, I missed my next backbeat on the snare drum.
Oh, hold on. And what was this? Was it the verse going into the next verse, or was it going into the chorus? You remember?
During the chorus, you can feel it all over.
right.
After I did a fill and came out of the fill, I didn't hit the snare drum. I hit the hi-hat.
Woo! I missed
a backbeat. I missed the backbeat. And so... Sir Duke, there's a backbeat on 2 and 4. Any of the Silver songs, any of Leon Silver's, any of the songs that you played on, you can't miss a backbeat.
Right. And
you
so
have
did
to
you
hit
did
every.
Did
ahead.
You tell that to Stevie? Did you tell him? Hey, hold away, I missed a beat right there.
Yeah, I said, can I put that in?
And what do you
say?
No,
it's okay. He said, no, it's okay.
Because some mistakes are perfect. See, because, you know, it's just like it felt good. It was not about it being good. It was about it feeling good. And if it feels right, if it lays, it stays. And that was it. What year was this when you guys were recording?
I think that was 77, I think.
Good gracious, I was just getting out of high school. I'm such a baby.
God. You know what? We were young. At that time, I think I was like 22, 21, 22.
Wow.
And Stevie's 2 years older than me. Look, man, we were young and free and adventurous.
Wow.
And
Hey, Raymond, I just want to introduce you. My co-host has been sitting here, and so I want to introduce Raymond. Don, are you there, Don?
I am here. What's going on?
Okay, Don Fleming. Our special guest today is Mr. Raymond Lee Pounds, the drummer for so many legendary artists. And obviously you just heard we were talking about the stuff he did with Stevie Wonder. We're going to also talk about the stuff he did with James Brown. And, I mean, he's played with the Whispers and Carrie Lucas and, I mean, stuff that people I play with, he played with. So, I mean, this is just, an amazing conversation for me. How you been, Don? You okay?
Yeah. I'm good, and again, to Brother Pounds, man, I am a big fan. You know, Songs in the Key of Life is still in my rotation, and, you know, it's a pleasure to meet you and a pleasure to have you on the show.
Don,
Don,
if you love me that much, why'd you play hooky when I was here 2 weeks ago? You didn't show up. I'm kidding.
It's all good. You know what? I deserve that. You know, I had to put the real estate on the side. I had to call Raymond Lee, but I was like, you know what? Man, we got him on another show. I'm definitely gonna check out the other show. I'm here. Hey, I'm glad you jumped on me.
I'm messing with you, John. I'm just kidding.
No, it's all good. I'm glad you lit that fire up to me, because the thing is, man, I am a big fan, and I'm truly just a student of all the things that you've done, and again, I'm happy. I'm beside myself right now to get a chance to talk with you.
That's great. You know, we have three different generations. I'm a generation after Raymond, and Don is a generation after me. And so, you know, when I was playing drums on records, Don was a little guy, a really, really little guy. And so, he grew up. He loves like the 90s and stuff, but he loves all the stuff that we've done, of course, but the 90s is what he grew up in, right, in that generation. So I just wanted to give you an idea of how young this old sounding man is. What'd you say, Don?
80s and 90s.
80s and 90s. And also, he's a retired school teacher, history school teacher, Raymond. So he has a lot of history with him.
You got to pay your bills.
Got to pay the bills.
Most definitely.
Your bills.
So,
you know, are you married, Don?
Yes, he's married. Wardell forgot to tell you, I'm an accomplished saxophonist in my head. In my head. Remember that.
In his head. Oh, Lord. We've met a lot of musicians that just did not want to put the time in. And that really saddens me when I think about that, because I've met a lot of people along the way in my journey, and I know you have too, and that's, oh, I want to do that. And I remember we all would just start figuring out what instrument we would play, and everybody, but some people just didn't have it. And then years later, they didn't have it to hold on to it. And because it's not meant for everybody. it's a special thing, right? It's a gift. And some people, you know, you just see something and you want it, but it's not necessarily for you. And so that, I have a lot of friends that never pursued it, but they were just able to stand beside and watch me grow and become, you know, a professional musician. And they would just be so proud because it's like, man, how did you do it? We started out together, but you quit.
I'll tell you how it works. You can't become good unless you put in the time. Okay.
Right.
That's
real.
My practice schedule during the days when school was in, I'd put in 2.5 to 3 hours Monday through Friday every day. Growing up playing.
Yes.
In the summer, I did 6 hours every day from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. I was taking drum lessons, and I rehearsed. I practiced 6 hours every day. And during school, like I said, 2.5 to 3 hours. Well, so most people, they only want to practice for an hour and then they're done. People don't want to practice.
Right.
So you can't do it. Wardell, you cannot play the way you play if you haven't put in the time, the hours.
Right.
And
absolutely.
That's the part. If you put in the hours, then everything is a cherry on the top.
I try to tell to my children, you know, because I was hoping that one of them would become a musician, and you know, and I had three of them, and my daughter was like, okay, Dad, I want to play guitar. I really want to play guitar, and I brought her all kind of stuff and got her lessons and everything, and I was like, Ariel, what?
How long did she take lessons and play until she quit? 6 months or 8?
Probably 6 months or 8.
Okay.
you're right on. You know that's the normal pattern, right?
Every now and then, if you're a teacher, you comes in that practices
and
practice everything that you give them.
Yep.
Instead of a half an hour. They go home and they put in hours over and over. And when they come back for their next lesson, you can tell how much time they put in practicing.
Yep. Some
people when they take lessons, they very little time practicing, and when they show up for their next lesson, you basically sit there and watch them practice because you know they haven't practiced.
Right, absolutely, and it's frustrating when you have hope and you want to help someone and they make you think they want, and then when they come back and you can see they haven't done anything, it's like, oh, that's disappointing. But that is what it is, and that's what you were saying earlier in the conversation, Raymond, when you was talking about the backbone being, we have so much responsibility as a drummer, and if you notice, Don, like when you go to the concerts, drummers are usually set center, right in the middle of the stage, because we are the foundation, and because it's so that the groove is dependent on that individual to drive that pocket, to drive that train, and to make it so that all the passengers, and that's the musicians and the singers, they are passengers, and to make it so that they could be comfortable enough to do and share their gifts with the world. And so they depend on us. And so it's so important. It's so important that we take our gig serious. And there's a lot of young guys that get up there and they want a solo in the middle of somebody else's. No, it's not about you, you know. And so being a pocket drummer it really takes has a lot of patience, and people are trusting you to carry that pocket and stuff. Now Raymond, when your stuff was coming out, the stuff that you guys were doing, it sounded differently than our stuff sonically in the studio. And what I mean by that, when Leon and us, our stuff came out, we had all these big hand claps, and things have changed. And it went from the snare being the lead to the kick drum being the lead on the records. Do you remember that, how the Motown thing had the boom, boom? It was all about the snare, ta, 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 and ta, and then all of a sudden it switched to the do, 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 do. Do you remember that transition, and do you know why that changed like that?
Well, the reason I believe that the producer, each producer has his style.
Ah.
Yeah. And so
good point.
So
good
the
point.
People in Memphis, the New Orleans recording, there's a the producers that they have a way that they produce things. Chicago, the records that are made in Chicago in those studios is because of the producer's style was implemented. There's Motown producers had a different style. Leon Silver's, that's Leon's flavor.
Mm-hmm.
That's his style. That's his concept that he hears in his head. So all the producers have a different style. And then the Sigma down there in Philadelphia, with Earl Young playing drums, those songs that came out, the stylistics and the dramatics and all that stuff that came out of Philly, it has a certain sound. It has a certain style. So it depends whoever the producer is, the producer and his arrangers,
they
had a different, their own style.
Yes. Yeah, that's I didn't think about that, but that's so right on point there. Don, go ahead.
Well, I'm listening to it, and I know you have a diversified portfolio when it comes to different genres and styles. And I guess my question to you, of course, working on Stevie Wonder's album, working on working with Solar and things like that. How was the transition? I guess the question I want to ask is, what was the different transition, or how was it to you going from the R&B stuff, the more, of course you call it black oriented music, towards like the Bob Dylans and working with artists like that, and it's just what was the difference? In your opinion, or in your viewpoint?
Well, you have to put in the time to hone your skills,
mm-hmm.
and make yourself a well-rounded drummer. That means that, you know, some guys, I'm a pocket drummer, or I'm a this, I'm that. Well, you need to know how to play everything. You need to be able to swing and read the music with a big band. You need to learn how to play with all kind of styles. And the only way you can do that, you have to study, put in the time, listen and listen and listen, and copy. And then when the opportunity presents itself, you're prepared. You're not afraid. Because you know whatever music that they put in front of you, you know you can read. You can read everything. You can play.
Right.
I mean, it's a matter of putting in the time.
Yes.
You have to spend time. You have to spend time trying to copy off of the guys from Motown? You want to copy all the guys in Philadelphia? You want to copy off of the New York? You know, and you put in the time. Now, everyone has not been blessed like that. It's because of the teacher that I had, the teacher that I had that taught me how to play. He made me a well-rounded drummer. He taught me how to play jazz. He taught me how to play R&B. He taught me how to play classical. And he taught me, whatever the styles are.
And I think, you know, and I wanted to add, I don't want to cut you off, but I wanted to add the fact, to me, that is a testament of your commitment to, you know, excuse me, to, you know, the artists that you've played for and at least honoring and owning in on your craft. Because to me, when we talk about diversified and all of these different platitudes that you were able, and platitudes mean, of course, different artists, but, you know, from someone like Sergio Mendes to the Earl Clues to Christy McNichol, the actress, you know, that's just crazy to me. But again, I know it's not crazy to you, because to me, you and Wardell talked about the commitment to your craft, and again, owning in on your craft. And to me, I'm as a young guy, as a younger cat, I'm always floored by that, because, you know, it's always those things to where, you know, the older generation still gives you those gems to the younger generation, and me being that younger generation, I can give those gems to a younger generation, and how that cycle continues, man, and we cannot break that cycle. And that's just, to me, I'm just honored. That's why it goes back to, I'm honored to have you on and just listen to you bring those gems. And of course, you and Wardell, having the experience that you have, able to broadcast it out there for the world, man, because again, you are you should be in that conversation. You should be in the Clyde Stubblefield conversations and all that. You know, it's just a test.
Don't say that name. Jabbo, James Brown, drummer, Jabbo.
Yeah.
You know, I played on that album, Slaughter's Big Ripoff.
Now, yeah. See there? I didn't know that.
There you go.
I'm just saying.
Okay. So with that being said, we're going to take a little small music break. And so tell me, Raymond, should I play Can You Get Up and Drive Your Funky Soul, or should I play the Slaughter theme? Which one?
Those are the two. Play Slaughter's theme, because that's the first song that was trying to play funk. And Jabbo was standing behind me, and that's a funny story.
Okay.
You gotta share that after it, though.
Okay.
I know you're going to a song.
I wanted to add also,
I was a film minor, and one of my projects was about the blaxploitation era, and I wanted to kind of add that into the story. But go ahead to the music. I'm just floored, man. I'm just ecstatic to have this brother on. So
yes, we
please.
Are both and honored at the same time. Okay, we're going to take a small music break, and we'll be right back with our special guest Raymond Lee Pounds here on Solar Records Radio. We'll be right back. Wow, man, this is what a beautiful blessing it is. Here we go.
Mm-hmm.
Better know it. You better know it. just know it.
Gracious Raymond, do you know when you were playing the kick drum like we do in praise and worship now? It's just that straight eighth note, boom, 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 boom. I didn't even know you were doing that way back then.
You know what that is?
What?
That's Jabbo's secret. Now, he playing those eighth notes like that.
Yeah,
I'm supposed to play they're supposed to be played very soft. You're supposed to feel the eighth notes, not hear them. So it's supposed
to
go boom, doo, doo, doo.
Right.
Boom.
The pulse. Yeah,
boom.
It's a pulse.
Boom. Well, what happened was that Fred Wesley, the trombone player, the musical director of James Brown, he came into town, and they were going to do a soundtrack album, Slaughter's Big Ripoff, for the Jim Brown movie.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Maceo is the only horn guy that could read music. So all the musicians on this album are Los Angeles studio musicians. So Fred Wesley went around to, he heard about me from somewhere. He came to a, I was playing a club gig. Fred Wesley came in and watched me play a set. I didn't know he was there. I didn't know who he was. After I took a break, he came over and asked me my name and asked me for my phone number.
Mm.
So about 6 days went by, and then I get a call. There's a recording session for you, Raymond Pounds, at Paramount Studio or whatever. I didn't know who it was for. I didn't care. You say, you got a session, you show up. You get your drums there. So let me shorten the story. So when I get in the studio, Jabbo is, he's pissed off because here's this little 20-year-old drummer doing, so he's not going to be on the album. So whenever that happens, you know, I play on New Birth Records, Lakeside. Whenever I play on same thing with Michael Jackson. The guy that plays the road gig on the road, they want to come to the studio and see the drummer play and why they're not on the record. So, so Jabbo was at, he came to the studio, and he's standing right behind me. And we played that first song, that blues song, Slaughter. We played a blues that I sent to you.
Right, right.
That's the first song we played. It's a swing, a blues. And then here comes the next song, is Slaughter's theme.
Okay.
So they passed out the music. And so counted off, and we start trying to play the groove. And we do, trying to play the groove. And James Brown, it wasn't feeling right. James Brown came over and walked and stood right up in front of me.
Uh-oh.
While we were trying to get the groove. And he started gyrating his body, and he was saying, "Hey, come on, drummer. Come on, man. Give me that thing. Give me that thing." I'm starting to sweat.
I can hear James in saying that, too.
Hey, drummer, come on. Give me that thing. And he's gyrating his body, and I'm starting to get nervous. Because I don't know what's that thing?
On the wall.
Thing you talking about?
And so we were trying to get the groove, and I'm playing, boom, pop, without the ghost eighth drum. So I'm just playing, boom, pop, pop, boom, pop, 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 you know. And James Brown going, "Come on, man, give me that thing. And it wasn't happening. James said, "Stop." Cut the band off. He said, "Jabbo, sit down and show him that thing."
Uh-oh. Oh, my God. How did that feel?
I was scared. Jabbo sat down.
I love your honesty.
And they started playing the groove. And I'm standing right behind him. And I said, "Oh, he's playing those eighth notes like that."
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So they made Jabbo give me his secret. And so after he played it for about 16 bars, then he said, "Okay, get up." And then I sat back down and I had it.
Wow. That is amazing.
I can listen to these stories all day.
Jabbo can't read. That's why he couldn't be on the soundtrack album.
Oh.
See, This is not Jane Brown, you know, with Jane Brown regular recording. Well, they're in there in the studio, and, you know, it's like a garage band. They're in there making up a song, and, you know, there's no chart. You just, you know, playing by ear.
A gorilla can
play the session like that.
Wow. I heard that.
If you get to rehearse and play it over and over, then everybody can learn. But when it's a big boy session and they pass out the music and expect you to play right now, because they've got breaks, they've got accents, they've got things that you have to play. And we don't have time for you to learn it.
Wow.
He was mad. He was
mad.
He was mad. He was standing behind me. And when I couldn't get that thing, I could tell he was smirking. This little young guy, he ain't got no groove, you know. Give me that thing.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I don't want
to
cut you off.
No, I wanted to ask. So what was the power, you know, with James Brown? I always hear these stories. I hear the stories through, of course, we had Friendly Womack, the eldest of the Womack brothers on the show, and he's a friend of mine. And he always talked about, when working with James, he always talked about the one, hitting everything on the one. Did you ever learn that, or did, you know, of course, rest in peace to the legendary Jabbo Starks and Clyde Stubblefield.
What we hear, that everybody knows about the one, because you're hitting the bass drum on the one.
Mm-hmm.
So you're playing, boom, pop, pop, boom, two, three, four, boom, two. Everybody plays the one, but if you don't have those eighth notes being played softly, you don't realize that that's the meat that makes the groove thick.
Yeah.
See,
so
See, Jabbo, and that's Jabbo's thing. With he could play those ghost notes, those eighth notes, without you hearing them. See, on Slaughter's theme, you know, you can hear, I'm doing the best I can. I'm not able to make them as soft as they should. But the fact that I'm playing the eighth notes, it gives the thickness that Jane Brown's looking for. Give me that thing.
Yeah,
you know, that thing, you feel it, but you're not supposed to hear it. You're supposed to feel it.
Let me just see if I can help Don with that one thing again. It's just, I just want to break it down just a little bit more. Like, just so when that one thing, like Raymond says, everybody knows that one. We all got to hit the one. So what happens is that it doesn't matter what you're doing. I don't care where you are. When it comes to the one, you better be back on the one. So if you, wherever you are doing your moves or your drum fills or whatever it is, you better hit that one, because that one is the accent to the whole beat. But that one is it, right? And what happens in between is that
you got to hit every one. On one,
you got to hit
the bass drum has to be on one.
Right. And then that drive, that eighth note, that one and that eighth note in between, whoa, that is a pulse for you, man. That keeps it alive. It keeps it moving. And that's what James was talking about. And that's what he ended up doing. And I was hearing it on the record. I was like, I never heard that before. And now I hear it so clearly, because I do it every Sunday now in church. We're always like, that drive that that they're doing on these records now, these praise and worship songs. And so, wow, man, I love how we go full circle. Listen, I have a question for you from overseas, and that question is, it's kind of a simple question. It's like, how does it work for you? How is it when you're playing with percussionists? Is that a difficult thing playing with percussionists?
They're going to hate me because I don't like percussionists.
Okay. And why? Why don't you like
percussionists? Because, you know, that was the beginning with the cowbell. That was James Brown playing that cowbell.
Right, uh-huh. So why
Brown
don't you like
off the tempo. He played that that was James.
Right.
And them Kungas, they overdubbed them later.
Okay. But why don't you like percussionists?
Because I think that they have a inferiority complex. Meaning, what I mean is, they can never lay out. They gotta play something all the time. They never take a break. And what they've done, they have these timbales. So whenever the drummer plays a fill that's supposed to be a drum fill, here they are with them damn timbales all over the top.
I've heard people make those distinctions about the everything kind of being cluttered like that.
They always have to feel like they're doing something. What I mean is sometimes there's a slow song that's soft. We don't need no kabasa. We don't need no congas. We don't need nothing. We don't even need a tambourine on 2 and 4. This is a ballad, okay? Go get a drink. Sit down. Take a break.
Oh, my God.
Take a break.
Oh, I'm
take
so
a break. Because you're just getting in the way. You know, certain things you are in the way.
Whenever Stevie,
I don't know what he's thinking about. He's got two percussionists. It's too much rhythm going on. You know, when they play contusion. Here's all these damn timbali shit. Oh, excuse me. Timbali and you know, and they don't even stick to one thing for a song. They play the bongos for about 8 bars, then they jump over to the congas, and then they play that about 16 bars. Okay. Then they jump on a kabasa or some, you know. It's like, hey, find something and stick with it, okay?
Every time
it's time for a drum fill, we don't want them. I don't want them to body fill over the top of my. You know,
I love this. I love this.
So when I play most of the records that I'm on, the percussion that you hear was overdubbed later.
Over. Great. And,
you know,
I'm so happy it was.
Paulino.
For their sake.
Paulino DaCosta and some of the percussionists, they're very good. But see, when they overdub percussion, they can control it. They can okay, play bongos or play congas or play this. Okay, no. And they stop the tape and say, no, don't play that. Play this.
Right.
Don't play this. So they can get it out.
You brought up a great point with that.
They play on everything. They play everything. You can play a song that's a ballad with the drums are playing brushes.
And here comes your percussionist.
The percussionist, he just cannot feel like he's not doing anything. So he's doing a kabasa. This is a ballad with brushes, man. Why are you doing that shaker?
He said, go take a drink. Chew.
Go get a drink.
Yeah, go take a drink, man. Take a break.
You brought up a great point, right?
It's a ballad.
I don't need to cut y'all because you are you off the chain right now, but you brought up a great point. You brought up a great point because I hear it, you know, people say, you know, that what's the thing they say, it's a beautiful mess, because I hear it, I hear that, and especially a lot of that, a lot of that 60s and 70s jazz, when you listen to Bitches Brew, you know, or Nefertiti, any Miles Davis, or any of those archival Miles Davis clips, so I think when you see like James M'Toume on Congas or whatever, I mean, what do you say about that? Because, you know, everyone says, well, you know, again, it's a beautiful mess. I love those albums, but I get what you're saying. But was there a problem when you listened, when, you know, when you would listen to a Miles Davis album or any or even elements of Earl Klute? I mean, does that kind of pop in your head too?
Well, like I said, the Earl Klute album that I played on, Twinkle, that song Twinkle, the percussionist was not there. It was me and Lewis Johnson on bass and Greg Fillinganes on keyboard.
Oh my God!
Okay, that's a power lineup right there.
Okay, that's. You guys don't know that song Twinkle?
Yes.
Yes, sir. I have it in my saved on my YouTube page.
Yeah, that's you and me. I mean, that's a Lewis Johnson, Greg Fillinganes, and me,
Thunder Thumbs,
and Earl Klute. That's, you know, all that other stuff on there, that's they put that on later.
Okay.
Okay.
Because you can't So that's how they control the percussion.
Okay.
Okay. I want to go back for there for a quick second.
Him.
Okay.
I wanted to go back for a quick second. We had talked about, you know, Wardell, you pretty much, you know, talked about the power of the one and you know, and that one beat and whatnot. There was an urban legend that I hear that Bootsy Collins introduced that, took what he learned from James Brown, introduced that to Parliament. My uncle, which is my mom's baby brother, he's like my big brother because he's only like 12 years older than I was. So I grew up a lot of that late 70s Parliament funkadelic. I gravitated towards that as a 4 or 5 year old, even 6 year old. I've always heard those stories, but going back to the, I just wanted to add that, but going back to the, you know, when you talked about, you know, the Slaughters, the movie and the soundtrack from Slaughters and talking about the blaxploitation era, I wanted to add, because I was at the time I was a film minor student, and one of my senior project was on like to do like a little 10-minute generic student documentary on the blaxploitation era, and we always talk about the importance. We talk about the importance of the blaxploitation cinema era because that saved Hollywood. A lot of people felt that saved Hollywood because at the time, you know, there's a historical. I don't get too much into history mode, but the point I wanted to make, as important as the movies were, the soundtrack was on. You think about every and to me, it all starts with the drummer. You know, you talk about the you know, you and Jabbo Starks, Clyde Stubblefield. You talk about, you know, even like the Willie Halls and the James Gadsons and all of these. Do you ever get the chance to, of course, you know, a few of them, you know, passed on, but I think Willie Hall and James Gadson, of course, the drummer for Bill Withers. Do you ever talk to them or kind of just, you know, have these sessions with them or at least communicated with them about the importance of how those movies impacted?
I talk to James Gadson every day. He tried to call me while I was on this call with you guys.
Oh, you should have brought him in.
You got to get him on one now. But
oh, yeah.
We got a legend right now, though. No.
I love. This is the thing. I love all the legends. I want to do a show where to get these guys on, and they're just going to take over the show and have their own conversation, because
for real?
I know they. Yeah. So I want to do that. I would love to get these guys on together. That would be awesome. Maybe I can get Raymond to help me do that.
I know, right? Hint, Raymond. Hint.
Yeah.
No.
No, James would love to come on. You know, he's a beautiful cat. I talk to him every day. I went to see him play Thursday night. He's got a club gig that he plays every Thursday.
Every studio I would go into, he was packing his stuff up. I go, dang, he's all in every studio I went to record in Hollywood. He was just finishing up. And moving on, I'm like, who is this guy that's everywhere I go? And so I did finally get a chance to meet him.
James Gaston is on everything. He was on
right.
I Will Survive. He was
yeah.
He was on all those songs on Saturday Night Fever with the Bee Gees.
I know, was everywhere. He was everywhere, so it's just beautiful that you guys were like that generation before me in Hollywood, because I did exactly what you're doing, sitting in the studio all night on Beverly Boulevard at Studio Masters. Have you ever recorded there, Studio Masters?
Yeah.
You did?
You know,
okay,
Gaston used to call me and say, man, my back is out. Go cover me on the session. He said, the drums are already there. So all you have to do is go there and play. And that turned me on. That's how I got on, started working for Norman Conner. Okay. I'm on Norman Conner's album, This Is Your Life.
Uh-huh.
He's a drummer. He called me in Gaston. I played on Norman Conner's song, This Is Your Life.
Okay.
He produced a Pharoah Sanders album. I played on the Pharoah Sanders album.
Another family. Well, he's from Little Rock. He's a hometown guy. Of course, he's an ancestor now. So definitely big on Pharoah Sanders down here. So,
and I played on. Phyllis Hyman's first album.
Okay.
It's just on and on and on. And so, man, I just want to, you know, just say thank you so much for all your stories and all the stuff that you've done for, you know, music history and how you blessed us along the way. And for me, like I said, it's truly an honor to be here with you. We got about another, you know, two more minutes and stuff before the segment is up. I want to ask you, is there anything that you would like to share with the musicians, young musicians, or, you know, anyone, listeners or whatever the case, that just love what you've done, that music and stuff, and ones that are trying to maybe do and duplicate, you know, our history and they want to continue. What is there anything that you would like to say to them?
Well, I just want everybody to know that the reason I'm here right now is because Wardell, because of your playing. When I heard you, I kept hearing those records and I go, who's the drummer? Because I don't know who this guy is. But I love the way he plays. He plays so good. I had to hunt Wardell Potts down to find out who is this guy.
You know, that's so crazy.
So I found him last month. You know, because Leon wouldn't answer. I said, Leon, who's the drummer? He would never answer. And then finally, I put it on Facebook, who is this drummer? And then Ray Fuller, the guitar player that was with Whitney Houston and with George Duke, Ray Fuller said, think it might be Wardell Pop Jr. I said, really? Okay. That's how. And then I went online and I find Wardell, and then I reached out and Wardell said, yes, that's me. So
I was just amazed.
As much as you like my drumming, I love your drumming just as much, Wardell. Thank you so much.
Oh man, thank you. Thank you for being a great teacher. And you know, we learned so much from, you know, just listening to you, and so thank you for, you know, spending that time with your coach and listening to him and developing your skills to the point where you really blessed generation after generation after generation. And it will continue to go even after we're gone. And so, man, oh, man, thank you so much. It's a blessing for us to be able to talk to you right now. I mean, that's really big for
me. We're friends.
Amen.
Call me anytime. Give Don my number. Call me.
Absolutely. All right. We're looking forward to, and listen, we really, really would love to have a conversation with you guys. If we can get you legends on here and just have a conversation with you guys about, you know, just your history and the things that y'all used to do and how y'all used to intermingle and all that kind of stuff. It would just be so good.
Oh, you just don't want me to talk. I'm just going to listen.
We'll figure it out.
Let's figure it out. Please, we'll figure it out. Okay. All right. We love you, man.
Okay, guys. Thanks for having me. I'll talk to you guys next time.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. God bless you. All right. Whoa, that was so good. Good night, Raymond. Wow, that was awesome. Okay, so, wow, guys. Woo. Man, I got to tell you, Don, I'm just really like, I really love that guy. I really enjoy talking to him. He's just a fun, real, down to earth, honest brother, and he really blessed
he is,
us.
He really is. Man. And just to look at his, I'm looking at his, I'm looking at his catalog right now, and I'm seeing all of these artists that he's worked with and played music on, and I wanted to add something, you know, before he left, but I know he had to go. And I don't want to expound too much, but you know, if I get off into history mode, you know, I you got to put a quarter in me and let me just go. But it's one of those things, you know, that Hollywood was going bankrupt, and because at the time, and again, I want to give you a little brief history on it, but I want the listeners to know who may not know at the time. When the suburbs were created, you know, there was a thing called white flight. So a lot of movie theaters that were in the inner were mostly located in the city, mostly the inner cities. So once, you know, opportunities to move out to the suburbs, a lot of those movie theaters stayed in the inner cities. So you had to find something that would appease the people that were in those cities. So that's why it exploded the way it did, especially in the early 70s. Once white flight came, a lot of white people, a lot of, you know, that went to see movies, a lot of them moved to the suburbs and whatnot. And a lot of them weren't really at the time just interested in seeing, you know, movies. In an influx like we did, and it was about wanting to see some representation. Now, sometimes, you know, the argument is what type of representation. That's for another conversation down the road, as far as playing the pimps and things like that. That might have been, quote, stereotypical. At the same time, it was about the representation that kind of gave a focus on people who look like you and me, you know, in the movie theater and seeing and filling those seats. So how that correlated to me, how the music correlated to that, it was all about the soundtracks too. The soundtracks were just as powerful. And that's what the point I made when we talked about the artists. Of course, you know, the Isaac Hayes and the James Browns. But you had the behind-the-scenes people like the Fred Wesleys and the Catfish and Bootsy Catfish Collins and Bootsy Collins and whatnot. And going into, we talked about the James Gadsons and the Willie Halls, you know, who played drums on, you know, with Isaac Hayes on Shaft and things like that. So the drummer was a very important piece, you know, and for him to play on, you know, the Slaughter's Rip Off, which is one of my favorite, one of my all-time favorite Jim Brown movies anyway, you know, to me, that was the history of my childhood and coming of age type of thing. You know, you were a teenager at that time, but, you know, mm-hmm. I learned it later on at a young age. Even in 1979, 1980, these movies came out in 74, 73, 74, and 75 and things like that. But, and, you know, Shaft coming out in, what, 71. These movies were very important to me coming of age. And
yes.
To have a man like, to have someone like Raymond Lee Pounds on, to me, just cements my belief as far as our music and what we've been able to reach out to the world. And that's
Amen.
Very important. And that's
yes.
all. I just wanted to say that, man. And again, I didn't want to waste your time and, you know, waste your time to go off tangent like that. But I did want to give, you know, if people wanted to kind of know the context of what I was trying to say, I just wanted to go ahead and just let them know and let the listeners know.
Wow, that's awesome. I just want to, you know, let you hear and the listeners hear another song that was on that movie, from that movie that he played drums on, that Raymond played drums on. And so this was just, you know, it's called Can You Get Up, Drive Your Funky Soul? Can you get up
All
and
right.
drive your funky soul? So, guys, we'll be back. We got about another 18 minutes left in the show, but we'll be back. And thank you guys so much for hanging out with us and blessing us here on Soul Eye Records Radio. Here we go.
Get yourself together. Drive that. Ah!
That is just, oh my. I love it. That's our old school. That's our old school right there, man. Thank you so much again, Mr. Raymond Lee Pounds, for coming on today and just sharing that your story, man. See, I love the stories. Get these guys on, man. You know, and they're generations and generations before us, and you get to pull, you know, they get to tell you all those stories and amazing stories, and it's just so, I could, like you said, I could just sit there and listen to them talk, man. And so, man, and stuff that you learn, you just never know. And this is so good for them too, because they have no clue that, you know, what they're going to say. They just start talking about what happened, and all of a sudden this stuff just starts pouring out of them. And so, my. And it's good for them. It feels good to release this stuff that's just sitting there in their archives. And so I want to say thanks to all the listeners and for hanging out with us today and just, you know, getting a chance to hear some history go down here. And thank you so much too, Don, for your great questions and stuff. Thanks, Greg, for, you know, everything you did today as well and making this thing happen. And we look forward to tomorrow, Throwback Thursday, where we can just, you know, just once again go back old school and enjoy some great music. So we're good to go here. We got about another 8 minutes left in the show. Don Fleming got something he want to share with you guys. But, God, man.
You know what? Of course, it's indie blues and all that jazz. And of course, we had the legendary Raymond Lee Pounds on the show again. And I know you thanked him. I want to thank him for coming on. At least coming on the second time, and I'm able to be here and hear all of those gems, man. It was a privilege to be able to do that. Thank you. Thank you, Wardell, for that opportunity. Before we get up out of here again, I want to remind everyone, tune in tomorrow, 3 to 5 p.m. Of course, it is Throwback Thursday, Wardell Podge, myself. And that night, if there's not an archive, we'll probably do something live. My show, Throwback Thursday Night, from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So make sure you tune in. And you never know who's going to call and pop in. Speaking of people calling and popping in, there's this young lady. I'm talking to the management team. We've communicated. And I'm a big fan of a lot of great indie soul that's out. You know, a lot of people may say, "Oh, yeah, it's like that's neo soul from the '90s," and just people singing. You know, people singing through a whole song. That's just me. That's what I like. You know, this young lady I want to highlight and profile, of course, indie artist. And she probably won't be indie anytime soon, because this young lady is just very talented and I try not to just do comparisons too much, but when you listen to this song, the song I want to play, when you listen to the song, you hear little elements of Shantae Moore in the song. And the young lady, I want to go ahead and play this song. Of course, the young lady I'm talking about, brand new artist. It's been out for a couple of years, but she is a brand new artist. Her name, she goes by the name of Sida Bae. And the song I want to play, she's featuring the legendary Herb Alpert, which we play on Wednesdays all the time. Of course, Herb Alpert was the A in A&M Records, formerly of the group the Tijuana Brass, amazing trumpeter. Of course, he was your boss, right, at one time?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
my boss.
Of course, yes, the A and A&M Records, and of course, he had some great albums that came out. One of my favorite songs, you know, from the Keep Your Eye on Me album, Diamonds, and what's the other song, Making Love in the Rain? I mean, and of course, you play Rise from 1979. Okay. You play that all the time. I love that song. You know, I want to play this song by a young lady by the name of Sida Bae. And of course, let me go to it. I know I scrolled past it, so we're gonna try to get on the show, Wardell.
Let's do it ASAP.
We're gonna try to get her on the show. I may be pronouncing it wrong, but I want to say it is pronounced Sida Bae. A little cutie pie too, by the way, but you know, that's neither here nor there. But anyway, the song I want to play, The name of the song is called Ready Enough, and it's featuring the legendary Herb Albert and Devin Morrison. The name, again, the name of the song is called Ready Enough. Again, I'm Don Fleming for Wardell Posse Jr. We'll see you guys tomorrow, Throwback Thursday. See you later, Wardell.
See you later, my brother. God bless you.
Y'all
Thank
have a
you.
Good one. All right.